Hello, and welcome to The Big Web Show, everything web that matters. I am here with designer, entrepreneur, etc., Sarah Parmenter. Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
We're going to be talking about can celebrity save the internet and lots of other fun stuff in just a moment. But first, a quick word from one of our sponsors. This show is brought to you by Squarespace. Things you can do with Squarespace. You can create a beautiful website to showcase your work, blog, publish content, sell products and services of all kinds, promote your physical or online business, announce an upcoming event or special project, and lots more. And Squarespace makes this possible by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers. We know some of them. They are indeed brilliant. Powerful e-commerce functionality baked in, lets you sell anything online. And you have the ability to customize the look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. I know clients who've done that, and I know designers who run a whole business. It's basically a business category, being a designer, developer, and optimizing Squarespace for various clients. Pretty cool thing to do. Squarespace also gives you everything optimized for phone and tablet right out of the box. So that's phone, tablet, and desktop, or as we call them in my studio, Mo, Larry, and Curly. Squarespace gives you a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, analytics that help you grow in real time, built-in search engine optimization, free and secure hosting, nothing to patch or upgrade ever, and 24/7 award-winning customer support. And Squarespace is encouraging folks to make it yourself by easily creating a beautiful website and make it stand out with a beautiful website. I like these folks because websites are important. And in the recent years, some people have lost sight of that. The bottom line is still websites. Websites are the thing. They are the thing that made the web great. Websites. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch and you use the offer code BIGWEBSHOW, all one word, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com with the offer code BIGWEBSHOW, all one word, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. And remember, a dream is just a great idea that doesn't have a website yet. Make it a reality with Squarespace. And now let's make this episode a reality with Sarah Parmenter. Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
It's 9 a.m. in New York and what, 3 p.m. in Leon C? 2 p.m.?
2 p.m.
That's right. Very good. Is it unseasonably warm or cold or what's it like?
England's just cold generally at this time of year. It's been very cold for, you know, we don't get that bad winters compared to some northern parts of America, but here it's been exceptionally cold. So
how do you cope?
Big jumpers. That's a very British thing to say, isn't it?
Big jumpers. I want you to try something. Can you try an American accent?
I sure can.
Okay. Well, are you going to do that?
I've been told my American accent is like a valley girl.
Okay, I hear that. A little more?
Yeah.
Let me put this another way. Do you think, what kind of accent do you have? Because there's a million British accents, like there's a million American accents.
What kind of British accent
It seems kind of posh, boarding school would be my guess. But probably you taught yourself that. Well, you know, growing up on the wrong side of the tracks in a, I'm just making this up and making an ass of myself. So jump in anytime.
You're actually strangely correct. Where I live is oddly referred to as the wrong side of the tracks, because it's the wrong side of the posh areas of London. It's Essex. And everyone in Essex talks like this, like they're really stupid. And it's the equivalent of, I think, the accent that you guys refer to as, is it Jersey Shore that you have? the one where it's set in North Jersey.
I haven't watched it, but yes.
So I believe that the Essex accent is the equivalent of the Jersey accent.
Okay, but you don't sound like that.
No. Just the Essex accent. It's an accent that's known in the UK for being a bit stupid. But my school hammered it out with us from 3 years old. They sent us all into elocution lessons. So from wow. 3 until 16, it was hammered out of us.
So that's interesting because in one way, that seems awful to force kids to speak a different way from their parents at such a young age. But in another way, you can go meet with the chairman of Apple or whatever and be comfortable and know that people aren't going to frown like they would if you had a, I'm from Essex.
Yeah, really.
In case like, you couldn't tell.
It's almost Cockney. It's quite strange. But oddly, I think my accent has actually changed over the years. I looked back on a video podcasting that I did many years ago. It's probably a decade ago. And I don't sound like I do now. And I don't know whether it's a byproduct of speaking a lot overseas in America, where you have to be quite you have to be quite clear, even with the British accent being quite clear anyway. With some things, you have to be quite clear. And I think that it's evolved into this strange hybrid.
Like the television accent there in America, there's a during the 1960s when they had three networks on television.
Oh, yes.
And they heard about this? And so the newscasters of the day had an accent that wasn't East Coast, wasn't West Coast, wasn't English. It was this made up. I think BBC is another one that's made up, right?
The BBC accent back in the day used to be exceptionally posh. It used to be exactly like the Queen, okay. Where if for anyone who's been watching The Crown, obviously right. That accent is, I think, technically referred to as RRP. RRP, that's the that's for retail, RP, received pronunciation. Okay. And I think a lot of people refer to themselves as having RP, but they don't. But yeah, the BBC accent used to be the RP accent, and then they had to drop it because they realized it wasn't sort of most people's reality. having butlers and...
I'm going to be drummed out of the Hall of Men, but I did watch season one of The Crown, and I liked it, and we're about to get season two in a few days on Netflix, and I'm looking forward to it. Well, my dad is older, too, and I think connecting, and I'm getting older, so I think the people that we see that are old and we know as these older people, mm-hmm. and then thinking that they were young and vital and the world was very different, you know, although it's becoming less different.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. What? Let's talk about... I wrote to you the other day, or I just sort of, we talked on Facebook or Twitter about this whole thing, this oath, right? The Oath Advisory Board. So
yeah,
Verizon bought AOL, which was pretty much a dead brand, and Yahoo, which was pretty much, I mean, they had really great, some really great products. Both those brands have really great products, but... Mm-hmm. But the parent brands had really taken a beating in the last 10 years. Verizon mm-hmm. bought them for a lot of money. And then they hired tennis player Serena Williams, rapper Chuck D, supermodel Carly Kloss, professional golfer Ricky Fowler, professional NASCAR driver Joey Logano, fashion designer Zach Posen, Firefighter and Vulcan Society President Regina Wilson, and Serena Williams is chairing the board. So basically, if you have these internet brands that don't work, if you put celebrities who have no internet experience to speak of in charge of them, it's going to fix everything. That's my take on it, but I might be completely wrong. Maybe these celebrities have a lot of internet experience.
No.
No?
I don't think you're wrong at all. I think that they're they're being used in their influencer capacity. I think that that's been banded around so much recently is the whole, you know, influencer marketing, and they are obviously well known in their respective fields, but I think they're confusing influencer marketing with actually running entire giant companies that require a lot of background knowledge of even just running product. I mean, you know, these people would have never launched an internet product, I doubt, in
that's
their life.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what yeah. I'm thinking. Well, Chuck D's launched products, although, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if a sports figure is wearing a Rolex, right?
Yeah.
That, and they're seen in the ad, or another kind of celebrities, you know, using a certain cologne or something, that apparently works. We know for a long time that that works. Mm-hmm. But these people are being asked to essentially make business and editorial decisions about products and content. And that
is
I don't get.
Yeah. No, that is a very, very strange thing. While I understand that he's sold products, it makes me wonder how much hand he's had in that. I mean, I don't actually know Chuck. Some of these people I genuinely do not even know. They must be huge, but I'm not the coolest person in the world. But even when they say they've sold products, normally there's a giant team under them. I don't get the impression that they've had to hustle, learn the ropes, get the products out there, do the marketing themselves. You know, they've had quite a different path to most people.
Right.
It doesn't sit well with me at all.
You've done a lot with celebrities in your work in the last few years.
Yes.
Talk about it without naming names?
Yeah, absolutely. We were looking after some of some of the biggest celebrities in the world, but also the biggest celebrities on social media. We were talking about celebrities who have upwards of, you know, 20, 30 million Twitter followers in some cases. And just having interaction with that caliber of person on a semi day-to-day basis, I guess, we would be in touch with them quite a lot about various things. They're too busy. They're very, very busy people being pulled from pillar to post. I struggle. I'm in the web industry and I am reading marketing blogs every day. I'm reading about, you know, upcoming things with Grid and that's my full-time job. And I struggle to keep up with the momentum that we have in this industry.
Right.
When you add in the celebrity element of that, they're so busy with tours or endorsements or getting money for doing a photo shoot for various things like Carly Kloss. You only have to look at her Instagram to see how busy she is on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. Now I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, Carly Kloss. She's on the board of advisors for this. Yeah. She's the one that's just recently taken on a giant Wix campaign. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Also,
okay.
She advocates for coding as well.
Is she a coder?
Yeah, she's got a school in the I believe it's Flatiron School. She does some classes to encourage women and young females to code, which I think is absolutely fantastic. The strange thing to then do is then go on and take a giant handshake with Wix for something that doesn't require coding. So all of her websites that are under her personal brand have obviously been done in collaboration with Wix, and she all the good she's done with advocating coding kind of is very strange that when you could then go to her website and look at source code, it's all Wix.
Well, we've both been approached by companies that where you really, really don't have to know anything. Like I started this with Squarespace. Squarespace, you have to know what you're doing still. I know if you just want to replace their content with your content, you know, replace the sample content with your content, you don't need to know what you're doing. But if you're going to have an effective website, you still have to know what you're doing. You have to know a lot about design and marketing and something something about code, or at least working with systems. But there are systems out there that's not true, that make Dreamweaver look like something Einstein wrestled with. I mean, there are some, we won't name names, but there are some really, but those programs come after people like you and me for all the time for endorsements. It's, I get it because they're trying to reach the audience we talk to. And the weird thing though, is that the audience we talk to probably isn't going to be interested in those products.
I would hope they're not interested in the products for our sake. I hope they're not interested in those products. I hope they turn around to them and say, actually, do you know what? That's not the right way to do it. If you'd have built it this way, maybe we'd have liked it.
I mean, I could see, I'm thinking of a product, doesn't matter which one. I could see me saying to a family member who says, let's say I have a difficult family member, right? That I, that I love, but they're hard to get along with and they need a website. I could see recommending a certain product to them because that way they can have something. And then I could look at it and give them like feedback about the content and design. And that way I wouldn't be stuck because I've been in the situation coding something for a family member and it becoming a problem. And you feel bad and everybody in that situation feels bad. So, yeah. So I think for that, you know, like, hi, I teach women to empower themselves by learning to code and design. But when I'm not doing that, I tell other people to use this product. Like, I can see that.
Yeah, it's a strange, but yeah, going back to, I guess, our original point, they're just, these people are just so busy. I just, I can't wrap my head around how they would potentially even have time to wrap their heads around what they're doing for such giant companies.
I wouldn't hire myself today. I mean, I would hire my studio to do stuff. I would hire me to come in and do strategy, but I wouldn't hire myself as a coder or designer today. I had just, it's like, it's so complicated now.
And it really is.
And at a certain point, you either specialize in one thing, like, all right, I'm just going to master front end. And when I say just, to me, front end is like five things now.
It is, yeah.
It compared to, is. We thought like, when we were like, when we knew the box model hack, we were like, yeah, I'm really advanced. I can make IE respect a basic two-column CSS layout. Man, I'm gonna, you know, but one of the problems I think that we've had too, because I know you love coding and love doing it yourself and learning how things work. I feel like the frameworks that we've had have been a blessing and a curse.
Absolutely. I've managed to sidestep actually most of the framework. I just refuse to use them. I've ridden the tide of just simply refusing to use them. And I've been lucky that in that time, I did change my job slightly in that I wasn't doing what we used to do 10, 11 years ago, which was everything. Just code up. Yeah, everything, code up the pixel perfect designs, make sure they worked in every browser, yada, yada, yada. I don't do that anymore. So I have been lucky in that I've just ridden out and I refuse to use them. I don't know. I went through this phase of thinking that I must be a really bad web designer because everyone was telling me, you know, oh, don't you use Bootstrap? Don't you use this? Right. You know, you can do it so quickly. And I remember when I first went on to have a look at what this, you know, Bootstrap, I remember thinking in inverted commas, what is this Bootstrap all about? And I went onto the website and I thought, I just don't want to use it. I don't even know what it is, really.
Like a gut reaction?
Yeah, my gut reaction was just, I do not want to use this. This looks like it's some kind of weird, hacky, sort of quick way of getting a website up. And isn't this kind of what we always say to people, you know, maybe you shouldn't be using? It felt akin to Dreamweaver templates back in the day when you could just pick your rollovers and pick, you know, very specific things and everyone's website ended up looking the same before you actually discovered the code editor in Dreamweaver. It felt a bit like that. It felt like a cheat.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are very smart people using it every day, right? Absolutely. They're very talented, very smart people using Bootstrap and its ilk. Bootstrap is sort of a stand-in for all of these things. And if you're trying, like, if you're trying to make something that functions like Twitter, what better way to start?
Absolutely.
Than with the framework, yes. Right? I mean, to invent the wheel or to go like, how would I do? I think when people have the luxury of picking their clients, mm-hmm. we can say, here's how I want to approach this. And the client says yes or no. And, you know, if you're in that position, I think it's harder when you have a boss that says, this has to be done in a week. It's not so hard, right? A lot of people have bosses who don't understand what they do. And so I think it's a really great jumping off point. My my problem with it, I don't have any problem with anybody using anything. And I don't have any problem with Mark Otto or the people who worked on Bootstrap. I get why they made it. I think our community is great at making stuff and sharing. Mm. But my problem is, in order to do the complex layouts we wanted to do and have them work in all these different contexts, people ended up turning to something like Bootstrap, which had figured out all these fallbacks and used JavaScript to make sure everything worked everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the best way to do lean semantic code, and it wasn't the best way to do the thing that I'd always had been advising people to do, which was separate your content from your presentation. Right, that markup ends up being, and since then we've seen this explosion of like CSS that uses, you know, semantic class names and all this crazy stuff that probably works and probably helps teams get jobs done faster, but has this negative effect, which it's hard to convince people. It's always hard to convince people. That thing that you're doing, totally get why you're doing it, enabled you to make that thing that's an awesome thing, but it's not accessible, or a year from now, you're going to be sorry you did that. It's hard to convince people of that, that they'd be better off. You still kind of work alone, right? I mean, you have a couple of people, but you have a very small team, right?
Yeah, it is me. And then when I need certain people, I'll pull them in for certain projects. But that might be changing as of next year. But
how so?
Yeah, because I'm going more. I'm just doing so much social media consultancy stuff at the moment that really what I need but doesn't exist is the ability to take some sort of youngsters, I guess, who are like sponges, and to train them up in the correct way to do social media. We've got a real lack of social media practitioners, an awful lot of social media users who think that they know how to put campaigns together.
But don't a lot of them? I mean,
no.
Okay.
No. Not around here, anyway.
If I look at someone like PewDiePie, that's not someone with a design background or development background. And yet, if I were to say, who's more successful on social media, PewDiePie or me? Mm-hmm. Very clearly, PewDiePie, by astronomic leagues. We're not in the same universe. So aren't there some people who become... Do you think there are some people who start out just using social media and could then become good consultants as a result, or no?
Absolutely, in their chosen fields. But nowadays, businesses, if someone wanted to emulate PewDiePie and say, you know, PewDiePie, how do I get really big by playing video games? And how did you do that? How many videos did you put out? He'd have really great information about that. What businesses are missing nowadays is the ability for someone to walk in and say, don't use that social network. Push all of your content over here. Let's have a look at the data to do. Right. That's what people are missing. And that's where the youngsters who are coming up think that they're practitioners of social media. But actually, when you start asking them about very simple things to do with, you know, Facebook dot posts or various other elements of advertising on some of these networks, they haven't got a clue.
Right. And just because you have – so if you're PewDiePie, you know you've gotten lots of followers because of a certain brand of content that's your personality. But it doesn't mean you could come into a toilet paper manufacturer and advise whether they should be on Instagram or Facebook.
Precisely.
Right. Which brings me to, and if you're a celebrity with all these followers, it's because you're a celebrity, not because you use social media so well, and which sort of brings me back to that opening of AOL, you know, the new Verizon company, saying, well, these people are very popular in sports, so therefore they'll make our products popular somehow. Just seems nutty to me. But how do you train youngins to become social media experts? Do you have workshops that you do? Do you...
I don't, yeah, no.
It doesn't have to be youngins. It could be anybody. It could be somebody. It could be somebody who just wants to do that and is talented.
Absolutely. Know. It's just that this has only come about because I've had to start interviewing for social media managers for a client of mine. And I was doing interviews yesterday. And a young lady came along and sort of with a portfolio and was quite keen to tell me everything that she was capable of doing and how she's, you know, been working in social media for 3 years, yada, yada, yada. But couldn't really explain any of the analytics or, how she'd got there. Or it was a very strange interview. I would just like to see.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I would just like to see more people actually, taking the time to understand each of the nuances of these networks rather than thinking because they're on these networks all the time, they know everything about them. I find that quite a difficult thing to handle sometimes. When you're in a meeting and you're talking about social media marketing, it's a bit like what we had with web design back in the day, where a lot of people had a lot of opinions on things and we would be desperately trying to say, but no, that's not the way, you know, you're not going to get the best out of it. It's coming back around again with social media.
I know nothing about it. I use it all the time, but I would say that's very clearly not my area of expertise. Right.
Yeah. And that's what we all tend to say about different things now, isn't it? Like you and I have come from the web sphere, but there's some things that we would just say, do you know what? There's more talented people out there to do that job now.
That's my whole job is finding the more talented people in each of the things that I kind of suck at.
Yeah, that's a smart thing to do.
But then if you're good at strategy, right, that's okay too. I mean, when people get intimidated by someone half their age who knows all the frameworks and everything, and, you know, they're great at what they do and you're great at what you do, and you should never be intimidated by it. Just, you know.
No, absolutely not. I always want to sit with those people and, like, almost like through osmosis, get more information and learn more. And yeah, it's just some people approach things very strangely nowadays.
It was Jeremy Keith. He wrote a tweet yesterday that I saw that said, I'm not a developer because I know all the frameworks. I'm a developer because I develop good experiences for my users.
Absolutely that. I've got a very similar line in my talk about design. I feel the same about design. We apply the same logic to design. We always think that it's something aesthetic, but actually if you're a designer, you should be able to design great experiences outside of something that's just interacted with on the web, because our jobs are not going to be that in a couple of years' time. Our jobs are not going to be just flat artwork. We're going to have to be learning how to design systems with, you know, voice, AI, all sorts of things that we just haven't even come into contact with yet.
We're going to get back to that in just a second. I have to thank another sponsor. Okay. So get yourself a glass of water. well. Not the listener. Listeners, stay put. because I want to thank VideoBlocks. VideoBlocks is the place to go for studio quality stock footage, audio, and images for a fraction of the cost. They really are very inexpensive compared to anything else you try to source. All content's royalty free, so you can use it for commercial or personal projects. Download all the stock media your heart desires from their member library, including 150,000 videos and 100,000 audio clips. New content is constantly being added, so there's always something fresh to download. Reasons to use VideoBlocks: maybe you've shot some B-roll yourself or used old or outdated footage, or had to use footage with an ugly watermark on it, not very effective. Or maybe your creative needs were compromised due to budget constraints. Or maybe you're just looking for creative inspiration. Sometimes thinking outside the box. You have to design something. So you look at footage of water, right? Or you look at footage of skylines and you go, oh, and it gives you an idea that you might not have had any other way. Same as going to a museum, having this library that you can turn to with, you know, for this one low fee each year that you can use as much as you want. It lets you feel free to just do whatever you want and be creative and not worry that it's going to be outside your budget. If you've ever been in the need for a quick soundbite, video, or image, this is the place to go. You can use sound effects if you have a podcast, and who doesn't these days? You can use video background on your website or a big hero image on your blog. What are you going to put as a big background video on your website, right? You can't. It's very difficult to find appropriate footage and then appropriate footage that you can afford. But with video blocks, it is not. And with video blocks, you don't have to worry about the budget. So if you needed to use the Statue of Liberty or you needed to replace some B-roll that you shot yourself, it's the place to go. Go to videoblocks.com/bigwebshow to get all the stock footage, audio, and images you can imagine for just $149 a year. You pay this one fee, one time, beginning of the year, and then all year long, download all the images, videos, and audio that your heart could possibly desire and that your clients could possibly need. That's VideoBlocks, VideoBlocks.com/BigWebShow to save on millions of studio quality clips, tracks, and graphics from video blocks. We were going to talk about the future of design often being not visual.
Yes.
Not even touch. And not future, it's already here. Right. I have friends working on Alexa and stuff like that, right?
I love that. I love that. I'm back and ready whenever you are. I've shut them in the kitchen so they
okay,
can...
Okay, we begin again at 34.
Thank
so
you.
32, end at 32, begin at 34. And we're back with Sarah Parmenter.
Hi.
How are you?
All good. All good.
We were about to talk about the future of design, and really it's here already, designing audio interfaces and so on. Do you think that the work you're doing now, which is more of a consulting nature, is helping you prepare for that?
Yes and no. I personally think that it's going to be one of those things that when my home is filled with these devices and I'm interacting with them on a more frequent basis, I'll understand a bit better about where all this is going. Right now, it's still one of those strange things to me that I feel like is coming, but it's here already.
Right.
It's something that hasn't piqued my personal interest as yet, but it's one of those things that I know I'm going to have to get on board with very, very quickly, otherwise I'm going to get left behind in terms of design stuff. It's an interesting time that we're in, for sure.
Did you ever watch 30 Rock?
No.
So it's a TV show, really funny, by... I think of her as the character name now, Liz Lemon, one of the great comedy writers of our time, whose name is escaping me because I'm old and it's really sad. But I'll think of it like 10 minutes later. But in this scene, the Alec Baldwin character, he works at a television company and he's showing this new innovation where the television is voice controlled. And he's really excited and he's showing it to the chairman. And... it's Tina Fey, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I know. I love her.
I love her, too. She should be on stamps.
She's phenomenal.
But there's this wonderful bit. Yeah, I think you can find it on YouTube, where he's demonstrating how wonderful the voice control TV is. And then there's this scene with Ice-T and, I don't know, CSI... I don't know what, CSI Cleveland. I don't know which CSI it is. I think it's CSI. It might be Special Victims. I don't know what it is. It's some TV show with cops. And Ice-T is one of the cops. And Ice-T and the other guy are having this conversation. And everything they say is triggering the TV to, like, change channels and character says silence and the TV becomes silent. And it's really funny. And they just made it really boring. But there's all kinds of unpredictable things that can happen with voice activation, right? Because it has to know when to listen and when not.
I do find it really... It has got so much better. Even just the improvements to Siri on the iPhone are incredible now. Just even the inflections in her voice are so much more natural. It's crazy.
I feel like I'm becoming crusty in my ways. And like my kid will use Siri she'll just pick up the phone and say, like, call my mom or something. But I don't do that. I have to, like, look someone up in an app. It's like my brain is trained to find the app that contains the phone numbers. Begin typing the name. You typed too many letters. You made a typo. Delete that character. Like, I have to do this. But somehow I feel like I'm doing something. I feel like if I'm talking to it, I'm cheating.
Yeah. Have you got the Apple AirPods or so?
No, those? I don't think men should wear those.
Oh, okay. Okay, I don't think they look great on anyone, to be honest, but they are really good.
No, I've seen them on some models, some beautiful young models, male and female, where they looked great. Uh-huh. People with sculpted cheekbones who looked like they were carved out of something, they looked fantastic. And I think, let me just put it this way, I think straight middle-aged men shouldn't wear them.
Okay.
Because they look like earrings, like dangle earrings. And you just, like, you can't, like, pick a message and send it, right? Don't send mixed messages. Don't unintentionally send mixed messages. You're confusing people, right? Yeah. I used to wear these pink clogs. And I would wear them. And I would be with my wife of the time and our little kid, and I'd be wearing pink clogs. And people would look and go, well, is he a bear? But if he's a bear, why is he with that woman? Like, what's going on? I was being stupid about my wardrobe. I think if you're a middle-aged man that's straight, I'm very passionate about it. I yelled at my friend Jeff McIntyre when he was wearing them. I saw him on FaceTime. I was like, take those out. And I turned into Larry David. I just became very upset.
Well, my point about them is that if you use AirPods a lot, I find that I use Siri so much more when I've got AirPods in because it's got a shortcut on it. You just tap the right earbud and it brings up Siri on your phone. So
that makes
I can go through an entire day without actually touching my phone and just using Siri for things.
I would do that. So I take everything back.
That's quite handy.
I use these Sony... So I got my iPhone 6 kept breaking, so I got a 7, like a day before they announced they came out with the 8.
You have the worst luck with Apple products of anyone that I know.
I don't want the 10. I'll tell you why. The notch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apple used to design stuff and you'd go, how did they think of that? I'm sorry. Does anyone think the notch is a good idea? I don't get it. Like, I'm happy to have this 7. It fits in my hand. I don't care. I don't want the notch. I like this thing.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from with that. I've just been putting together, like, conference slides and chose purposely not to use the iPhone X as a placeholder thing for my screenshots because it was just a pain for everything. Every time you try and lay a screenshot out in it,
that you have to do the notch. Yeah. So what happens? You're watching Lord of the Rings on your phone, and there's a notch covering, like, just this little portion of the screen, or they pretend they start the screen to the left of the notch, to the right of the notch.
Uh huh.
Well, if you're going to bother doing that, then why have it? Why not just have a strip at the top? Like, they wanted to make a point. They wanted to achieve something that they weren't actually able to achieve. Right? You can have all glass, but you can't have all glass because you've got these components. so they make this notch. Like, I don't know. It just, I know.
It's a strange design decision for sure.
I know these are like first world problems and everything, but but here's the thing. If you can't rely on, in this crazy world, if you can't rely on Apple to make unassailable design decisions, it calls. Do you know what I mean? It's just, yeah. Like, and so I have the 7 and I got these Sony wireless headphones because the 7 is the first one where you can't use the regular audio jack that comes with your headphones.
Oh, yeah, that drove me insane when I got it. Insane.
But my iPad uses the regular, and you have to plug it in. So on any given day, if someone calls me on the phone, I need to have headphones on and turned on and be wirelessly sucking down battery power all the time, so they're ready to answer the phone for me. But then to do the podcast, I have to plug a cable in and plug it into the old-fashioned audio jack on the back of my Mac. And I know they've done something like a third thing with it. So I thought about having like the 7 pieces that you jack into a new headphone to make it work. The best compromise I could come up with is to constantly carry around headphones that work remotely or not remotely, with or without a cable.
Yeah.
And work differently on different devices. And I've had, if I don't have them on and turned on wirelessly and the phone rings and I try to answer it, the phone will send the audio to the headphones that aren't turned on. And I'll be shouting into it, "Is this my lawyer? Is this important? Is it the police? I can't hear you. Hold on." I'm just like, and I'm like a technology expert. People are like, "Let's consult with Jeffrey Zeldman. We think we should hire him to solve our technology problem." "Hello, I can't use my phone. I have the latest. I have an iPhone 7 and I can't use it to answer your call. But it's really got a nice button." Like, you know, I'm.
Yeah.
I know.
I feel your pain. I think I'm banned from the Apple Store now.
Why? What happened? Because you had to replace your Mac 3 times?
Not only that. I bought the new iPhone 8 and I thought to myself, do you know what I could do with scaling down the amount of stuff I carry on my iPhone, because we all carry way too much stuff.
Right.
And I got the 64 gig version. Because the one, I think they were selling, it was something strange this time. It was either like 64 and 250 or something. The jump between the two was absolutely crazy. And the jump in price was crazy. So I thought to myself, well, do you know what? I'll not do that. I'll downsize it. And when it came to actually putting my back onto the phone, which I was doing in front of them because they were also taking back my new MacBook Pro,
right,
it didn't work. So there was me thinking that in this day and age, you'd be able to kind of select what you want to sync back onto your phone. You'd be able to say, "Oh, okay, take my photos, but leave my, all the app data and stuff. That can all be refreshed, and I don't need that." No, you can't do that. It's an all or nothing thing. So if you have 128 gig of data and you're trying to selectively put back 64, it doesn't work.
But okay, so. Yes, that's crazy and wrong. But once it is backed up, you can go into your phone settings and see how much different apps that store data are using, and go, you know what? I'm going to get rid of these videos because I see here that I've got 18 gigs of video data. That's silly. I'll get rid of it and I'll download it instead. You can make those decisions, but then when you try to restore, you can't. What's the thing that everyone uses to back up? I use other programs to back up, but everyone uses Apple's easy automatic backup thing. This is just going to turn into a kvetch about Apple. Man, talk about our privilege. And I'll tell you another expensive Apple product I bought that slightly disappoints me. Okay. Oh, my God. Check my privilege. All right. The thing, you know, the thing that automatically backs up Time Machine.
Yes. Okay. Yeah,
so I bought the Time Machine thing because, and I figured I could just use it as a backup drive and Well, so first of all, you can't plug, you can't connect it by cable. It only connects by Wi-Fi, which makes it very slow. It has a Wi-Fi signal, which is nice. Anyway, it filled up the other day, and instead of doing the intelligent thing and saying, the drive is all filled up, should we start erasing the really old backups that you don't use anymore so we have room to record new ones? It doesn't do that. It just says, the disk is full. Like, so for the rest of my life, basically I'll have a disk that has like my 2013 backups from 8 systems ago in case I ever want to restore them. Why would I ever want to restore them? It doesn't make any sense. And I've tried every way that you can think of to go like, can I just wipe this disk and start over? No, I can't. It that's not an option either. It's like, basically I can choose a different disk to start backing up to. So what they're saying is go buy another one of these so that someday you can have a library full of plastic, full of interfaces you don't use anymore. And it's like, guys, these aren't rough drafts by James Joyce. This isn't stuff that needs to be preserved. This is a snapshot of a computer I was using 4 years ago. I don't need to back up to that anymore. I really just need a recent backup. So I continue to use what I use, which is, what do you, I use Super Duper.
Oh, okay. I just use Dropbox. I just have
I have everything in Dropbox too, but Super Duper lets me keep a system in case. It's come in handy. Actually, I find the operating system much more stable these days, but during the transition to OS X, there were times in early OS X where I'd have like a catastrophic meltdown with my thing, and if I could boot off a different drive, I could restore. And Super Duper, you can boot off the drive you back up to. Right. And then restore from that. And it works beautifully. So I use Super Duper. It's like $14 shareware or something. I bought it like 100 years ago and he's never asked for any more money, which is crazy. You just, you know, he keeps him every time Apple changes everything. He updates his product and he never charges anything more. I don't know why. Just a really good person. Super Duper. You know what?
Wow. I feel like the time machine problem you're having is it used to be a setting. I've re-put time machine on one of my external hard drives recently. And it was a setting that I got offered at the beginning, which was...
But they don't offer it now, apparently.
It might even be in system preferences when you've got time machine connected.
Let me look there.
It says the oldest backups are deleted when your disk becomes full.
Nope. Backup automatically... That's what it says, but that's not what's happening.
Oh.
That's what it says. That's okay. That's how it should work. So that's probably how it's working for all the listeners. And the listeners are punching their internet radios now and going, this is wrong. Zeldman's totally wrong. He's doing something wrong. But honestly, all I did was show time machine in menu bar, local snapshots as space permits, hourly. What I just went with the defaults and then it filled up. And then it said, there's no more room. Go screw yourself, basically. There's no more room. No other option. There's no more room. And your option now is nothing. And if I go into Time Machine on my hard drive that I was backing up with it, I can basically select a different backup disk. That's all.
Wow.
So
you really have the worst luck with that.
So for some reason, what we're saying is for some reason, my disk is defective or some preference in that machine is okay. But this is just supposed to work, right?
It is. Yeah.
And there should be a fail. There should be a way to just say, wipe all of them. I don't need them. They're all up, like 5 years out of date now anyway. So.
Yeah, they're absolutely. Does it not just work like an external hard drive? Like you just wipe it back to.
No.
That's a very expensive external hard drive then.
Yes, no, it becomes, yes. It's an external hard drive with Wi-Fi. I don't know. I'll probably get mail and Twitter comments on, well, you idiot, you should be doing blah, blah. I don't know. Or they'll ask really specific questions that I won't be able to answer anymore because, yeah. Super Duper, though, is from shirt-pocket.com. They're not a sponsor, but I just want to give them a shout out because Super Duper version 3.0.1 is the latest, and it just, I don't know what it was. It was like $25, like $27.95. Okay, it's now gone up to $27.95, and it just works, and it's amazing, and it has gotten me out of some real jams. Yeah, I don't know.
But Heroic System Recovery.
What's that?
I like the title. Heroic System Recovery for Mere Mortals.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
That's nice.
They must have a copywriter friend. Right. How much of what you do now is what you call is writing?
So much.
Right? Because just, being a consultant on social media. How many times have I seen something from a celebrity that you or someone like you actually wrote?
Quite a lot, I would think. Yeah, an awful lot.
Do you manage some of them, or do you set them up, give them a style guide, and walk away, and they have someone else do it after that?
Normally, you would set them up with kind of a quarterly thing, almost like a style guide of where you're going for the next quarter with them. Topical things that are coming up that should be on their radar, or things that are personal to them that are on their radar that they should be tweeting, or mainly it's Instagram for most celebrities nowadays.
How do you do Instagram for those celebrities?
Generally you're pushing it's almost like a design for that quarter of what they should be putting out. And normally what they do is they will hire a younger person who is really happy to follow them around with a camera for the next 3 months for very little money. And they will have them take all of their photos for them.
Let's say I'm following the main female character from Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Just the actress who plays that character. She's basically got a young assistant that, you know, brings her a shake in the morning and then walks around where she's doing her, you know, she goes to the gym and the assistant takes a picture of her or whatever. And you have set these guidelines like do X once a day, do Y once a week. Use these colors. These colors look good on you, or these are your brand colors. How specific do you get in terms of don't shoot close-ups, do shoot close-ups, do use filters, use only this filter? Like, do you get that into the weeds with your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it depends on the client as well. One that I've got in mind at the moment, she is she's a celebrity over here, and she's really good at doing her own content stuff. But what she's not good about is thinking about the content that she puts out, whether that's attracting the right kind of brands for where she wants to be placed in the next 6 months. So she's quite a serious actress. She doesn't do the reality shows, even though she gets offered them quite a lot. And there's quite a big disconnect between that very professional side and then what they can be seen to be posting on Instagram can actually do them quite a lot of harm when they go into castings. So sometimes you have to just make them aware that maybe doing this, although this collaboration is going to pay you, you know, £5,000 for one image, you've got to think of the bigger picture as to when you go into the casting room, whether they're going to be happy about that being on your Instagram account. But yeah, for the most part, they're actually, they need help in absolutely everything, right down to how to edit their photos, the size of their photos, filters, the best filter apps. Sometimes I will do that for them and literally have sent guidelines, you know, download Bisco Cam, go to this. Do you want your photos to be warmer or cooler? What kind of thing are you looking to the whole feed to look like? And some people, a new thing is to change it up every season. You know, in the winter, their stuff will look very, very warm and quite saturated. And then they change it all up in the spring. It's all pastels and... it's always changing.
I've been using warm too. It's very cold here, and I've been using a warm color palette, not in Instagram, but in Swarm, actually, right? The Foursquare checking up for the you know, the 8 people that I play Swarm with. But I feel like I probably tweet a lot of stuff that's harmful to my brand in terms of what kind of business I want to get for my studio.
Right, right.
Because, yeah, I post a lot of political stuff. I'm probably hurting my studio right now with this podcast, just with some of the complaints I've had. Like,
oh, God.
There's probably an executive at Apple right now going, all right, scratch Zeldman off the list. But, you know.
Yeah, it's so difficult because we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it when certain job posts, you know, when people apply for jobs, the first thing I do is go and look them up on social media and I'll, you know, if you're going for a social media manager job, you cannot have spelling mistakes all over your personal Twitter. It just doesn't, the two don't go together.
Yeah, it's sad because some really brilliant people have trouble with spelling, but but that doesn't matter in this particular job. I have to thank one more sponsor and then we'll be right back, okay?
Sure.
You're good?
Yep.
Okay. I want to thank sponsor HelloFresh. You might say, what is HelloFresh? HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers your favorite step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. Choose your delivery day for when it works best for your busy schedule. You can pause your account for weeks at a time when you're out of town, like I'm going out of town. Next week I'll be in Denver for an event apart. Very excited about that. So no HelloFresh next week. And then pick it up again when I come back in town. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits, so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. They're delivered right to your door in recyclable, insulated packaging. And HelloFresh offers a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. And there are three plans to choose from: Classic, Veggie, and Family. Classic is a variety of meat, fish, and seasonal produce. Veggie is vegetarian recipes with plant-based proteins, grains, and seasonal produce. I love that one. And Family, which is quick and easy meals with all the yum-worthy flavor the whole world will love. The whole family will love. And the whole world, which is your family, will love. I just flubbed that line. Family is quick and easy meals with all the yum-worthy flavor the whole family will love. What's great about HelloFresh? You won't spend all night in the kitchen. Most recipes only take 30 minutes. There's loads of one-pot recipes for seriously speedy cooking with minimal cleanup. And each week there's a 20-minute meal on the classic menu for when you really don't have more time than that. With the holiday season coming, there's always chaos in the kitchen and the festive hustle and bustle. You should take time to enjoy means you want to spend less time in the kitchen, which makes HelloFresh a very good option because HelloFresh does the shopping, planning, and delivery, so all you have to do is hustle, bustle, and enjoy. They include recipe cards with 6 easy steps to calm the holiday chaos, and you can choose your delivery day to keep up with your busy holiday schedule. It's faster than having groceries delivered to you. My favorite meal so far is the rapid butternut squash agnolotti. Agnolotti is a homemade pasta dumpling with butternut squash inside. Soft, delicious. We made it with sage brown butter sauce. It only took 20 minutes to cook. Cooking the agnolotti actually took 5 minutes. The rest was prep. And by prep, I mean washing vegetables and a bit of chopping. I am the opposite of an expert in the kitchen, mincing and all that other fancy stuff. I can't be bothered with that. And with HelloFresh, I don't have to be. It's literally just opening fresh ingredients, chopping a few things, and then sauteing, baking, grilling, and sometimes even just boiling. It's easy, it's healthy, it's fast, and it's crazy delicious. Again, you can get vegetarian or classic or family. So for $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code BWS30. That's $30 off your first week of HelloFresh by visiting HelloFresh.com and entering promo code BWS30. Thank you, HelloFresh. That is it for sponsorship. And now we turn to celebrities. I just want to know, what are they like? What are they really like? Are they just like you and me? You've worked with a lot of celebrities. They're not?
No.
Are they much more ambitious?
Well, what's funny is that there's levels of them. There's hierarchies of them. I guess it's just life, isn't it? There's hierarchies of everyone in life. What really astounded me was when I realized that there were hierarchies within celebrity levels, not just, you know, the D list that gets banded around a lot.
Right.
But within them, I think one of the funniest things that I was ever told was someone who I do work for is I would consider a celebrity, you know, of a really good degree. And she said that she went to another celebrity wedding and she couldn't go into the female toilets because the other females who were in there were deemed higher celebrities than she was, and they had put their bodyguards outside the toilet. So she wasn't allowed to actually use the female toilets. And I was like, that was exactly my question. I said, what did you do? She went, well, I just waited until they had left the toilet. And I said, but they would know who you were. So how does that work? Like, whoever's bodyguard gets to the toilet first. It's like a strange power struggle or something. She's like, oh, it happens all the time.
Really? Okay. So I'm just going to pretend it's Katy Perry. I know it's probably not Katy Perry. So Katy Perry needs to use the bathroom at a celebrity's wedding, and Katy Perry has to stand outside waiting.
Yeah.
Because I don't know who. Because Madonna's in there. It really wouldn't be Madonna, but
is in there with another female celebrity, and they've stuck both their bodyguards outside. That was a real eye opener for me.
I don't know what they're like now. I 10 years ago or longer, I was working on some Warner Brothers websites, and Don Buckley, the client, hired me to do the interviews. And I interviewed a lot of celebrities, and they were really all different, very, very different. Some, Samuel Jackson is like the nicest. He pretended to always remember me, or he actually did remember me. Maybe I just looked weird enough or dressed weird enough or something that he remembered me. But he'd say, how you doing? And just like be like a person. Which was kind of awesome. And then there are ones who are always on and always working really hard to make you know they're a celebrity. And I feel so sorry for them. Like,
that is absolutely they fall into two camps. I always feel like you have to work with celebrities. You have to not be, you can't be starry eyed around them, whoever they are. You have to be so cool. Even if inside of you, you're like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh my goodness. And to be honest, I've felt more starry eyed about meeting some people in our industry who I feel have done really, really amazing things than I ever have with celebrities. But that's just my personal bias.
I was kind of stupidly starstruck with Ice Cube. You know who Ice Cube is?
Yes.
Okay. So I met Ice Cube, George Clooney, and Marky Mark at the same time, and I was starstruck with Ice Cube. It was for Three Kings. It's this really great underrated film they made in the early 2000s. They made it right before September 11th and before we were back in Iraq, but it was about the previous time America had gone to Iraq, and I gotta say I was a little bit dopey around Ice Cube, but mostly, you have to act like you're not starstruck, right?
Yeah.
And just be a person. But not act like you think you're on their level either.
No, and that was what I found really difficult. When I worked in LA, there was a really difficult balance to be had of we used to have some, considering where we worked, we used to have some real, really amazing people drop by or just be on the phone as well. That used to be very strange, was when our CEO would just, you know, speed dial someone and they'd be on the phone and you're thinking, I recognize that voice from somewhere. But you have to act very professional with them, but also have an air of sort of like, I don't really care who you are. I'm just here to do a job as well. And that can be a really difficult balance to strike, because a lot of celebrities want you to know they're a celebrity. They want you to know just how powerful they are or how well liked they are, or various different things. They're all very, very different, but for the most part they fall into two camps of the people who will talk to you like a normal human being and act like a normal human being in front of you, or the ones who desperately want you to know that they are a celebrity, and if you are acting like you're quite casual around them, they want you to act up. They want you to play the game of, you know, pandering to them a little bit. And that can be really difficult to manage.
Mostly I got by doing what I do with my clients, which is a subtle form of deference. Not that they're better people than me, but this is their dime. They're the client. So I'm here to help them achieve their dream. I'm here to help them, right? So just that kind of respectful attention. I'm listening to you because you've hired me. That same, just basically that, seemed to work fine with most of the movie stars. And the worst one, well, Kevin Spacey was really angry at me.
Okay.
He got really angry because I asked him, whether acting was like a suit of clothes that he put on and then took off whether film acting was like a suit of clothes that he put on, or basically I asked him in a disguised way if he was a method actor, which I didn't know was a bad thing to ask. And he just got really, really angry at me. Which we kept. We actually kept it because it was really cool. I kind of loved it. And my dad to this day still says, "Oh, Kevin Spacey, he really was disrespectful to you." And I was like, "It's fine. I pissed him off. I asked the wrong question." Like, well, no, I don't, you know. And but most of them, And then they're the ones. Do you ever have ones that are high, and you know they're high as hell? And I don't want you to name names, but just, and you're like, "Wow, this is difficult because I'm taking instructions from someone who probably should be in a hospital."
I've had intoxication be a problem. That was probably one of the worst ones because we were doing a very strategic rollout of an app, and all of the celebrities had access to the app, but we had said to them, you know, there's some of you who, if you start posting on this app, you will crash our servers, and we're not in that position right now. We want you to have the app, but the app's so not in a good place that we can't actually offer you an app with limited functionality that means that you physically can't post to the network. We're just going to have to trust that you won't. And four very big celebrities went out with one another, and I believe they went out and got drunk and decided that they were all going to post on the social network at once
and to crash it for fun.
No, just because one of them posted something funny, and because it was a new social network, it gained quite a lot of traction. And then the much, much larger celebrity thought, "Oh, I didn't realize that there was so many sort of like super fans on this network. I'll post too." And the whole lot came crashing down. And I think it was down for a couple of days at that point.
Was one of them a teenager?
No, they were out. They were just out of being a teenager at that point. But, yeah, that was interesting. So that's that goes back to the whole how you ring up a celebrity and you're like, "Thank you for crashing our network with your uber popularity that we need to harness in about 3 weeks' time, but you just caused us a major problem." Like, handling that can be really, really interesting. My interpersonal skills got really good during that time.
I know what you mean about being more daunted, more starstruck, meeting somebody from our profession, you invented JavaScript, is more impressive to me than you have a really, you work out a lot.
Yeah, and absolutely. Have good teeth,
like,
yeah. To me, there's so much, you know, I love real people anyway, but I just prefer the small bubble of people in our industry that I'm quite happy to say, "Oh, actually, no, I don't really follow that celebrity, but I could tell you a lot about so-and-so who discovered blah, blah, blah in the web industry."
Are you a gossip?
Am I a gossip? No, I don't enjoy that side of things.
Really?
Well, I'm not a gossip in terms of, I don't enjoy celebrity gossip. If it's gossip about, you know, people that we know, maybe.
Yeah, that's okay. A little bit me too. A little bit. You can't you can't help but like it a little bit. You know, you don't want to do too much, but a little bit. It's kind of fun.
I only like it when it comes back to bite people in the ass who have like done you wrong at some point. That's the type of gossip I really like.
Oh. When
it comes back around and you're like, oh, that's a shame to hear that about so-and-so.
Oh, yeah. I remember in middle school, a kid who beat me up like the first day. And then later seeing that, and later I was hanging out with like, the only way I survived middle school was allying myself with much tougher kids than me. And I became their like clown mascot, like little courtier doing like dirty underground comics to amuse the other eighth grade boys that were in this tough gang.
Right. And
I remember like then seeing the kid who had beat me up, like sitting there with a nosebleed after someone else beat him up. And my friend made a very rude joke, and I remember going, that feels kind of good. It shouldn't, but it feels kind of good.
I know. It's just human behavior, right? Anyone who says that they don't enjoy stuff like that, I don't trust them.
Yeah, I think it's okay to feel a little bad about it and wish you didn't enjoy it, because I think if you just enjoy it with no guilt, then something's wrong. But, yeah. Well, so we're going to meet in Denver in, like, tomorrow.
For a
conference. Are you going to ski while you're there?
Because with my luck, I would be the one person that fell over, broke their arm, and then probably smashed their face and wouldn't be able to talk. So
same.
Yeah.
I can't even get a backup drive to work. Do you know what I'm saying?
No. I just, with my luck at the moment, I was just like, man, I would love to, but I've never skied before, so that's just asking for trouble.
I've done it once. And there was such a long wait for the training session that my brother and I, as kids, we just said, and we went to the top of this mountain and we didn't know how to stop.
Oh.
And he was pretty skilled anyway because he's just naturally graceful and athletic. But I was just like going, look out, look out, just shouting the whole way down, totally terrified. And I like threw myself on my ass to like not kill anyone. Like as I skidded, and then that was it. That was my skiing experience, and and many decades later, I have not tried again.
It appeals to me in the right conditions, but I think I wouldn't be able to enjoy myself because I would just have visions of standing on stage on Monday in a cast.
I just want someone, a very good skier, to strap a movie camera to themselves and film it, so I can enjoy it that way.
Yes. While you sip hot chocolate with a blanket wrapped around.
That's like how I want to experience jungles.
Me too.
Like I want to see the wild animals and hear the narrator with a British accent, probably BBC, saying like, you know, talking about the mosquitoes are thick today. Like, yeah, as I like pull my blanket up. Exactly. Wow. Think of that. Mosquitoes. As I turn on the air conditioner to max setting.
Oh my goodness.
Well, listen, this has been a riot and always a pleasure. And I'm looking forward to see you and friends in Denver. And thanks for doing the show today. I really appreciate it.
No worries. I'll see you over the other side of the planet tomorrow.
Beautiful. And listeners, we'll see you on another Big Web show very soon. Ciao.